Welcome to Talking Comics. We have Keith Foster. Now, you're one of the co-founders of Invader, or
yeah,
is that
all right? Managing partner at Invader? Correct.
Managing partner. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into the Invader, and then we got your comic to talk about too.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Let's get to it.
Yes. No. That's awesome. So I think I'll talk about my comic self. Which okay. is comics-wise, I mean, I've been a comics fan since the mid-80s. I fell in love with comics in 7th grade. I fell out of love with comics in 8th grade. I fell back in love with comics right around the time I went to college, and that was when I never looked back. You know, after that, I've loved comics for a long time. I've collected comics for a long time. Sometime in 2010, me and a couple friends said, I mean, there's a much longer version of this story, but I'm actually part of a funk band that is on Spotify right now. The band's name is Big Pimp Jones. Big Pimp Jones.
And I want to know why I haven't seen this on your Instagram.
I mean, I should put more of it on there. But what, you know, the two records that we had on labels that did the best were both fake, blaxploitation soundtracks. And what we pitched to the label as a sequel to those at the time was a fake Godzilla soundtrack. So it sounded like a funky, funky, funky Godzilla soundtrack. The label passed, but then I was like, well, this is a cool soundtrack. You know, what if I made a giant monster story? What if I wrote a giant monster story? And that that's the birth of Kadoja. So I met, had two people that I knew, Rory Smith, who drew the interiors, and Lance Pilgrim, who was art design and also just general all around. You know, he put the book together. He had these great ideas, and he was there to help bring the story together as well, in addition to doing the covers and art direction. And we self-published that for a couple of years. So we got up to around issue 5. We collected it in a trade. We actually did a hardcover on to make it that year, but Lance and Rory did. Turns out that tabling not far from us at New York Comic Con was Mike Perkins and the other people who were part of 215 Inc. at the time. Mike saw the book. He said, I'm interested in the book and we're interested in publishing it. We signed a contract. The rest is history. Ever since maybe, 2015, 2016, I've been, part of 215 Inc. And then as a creator, and then a little bit after that, I had the opportunity to become part of the company itself. And I was like, great. So I worked with Mike and a couple other people on 215 for a while. And then, one thing changed, another thing changed, et cetera. And then we decided that, yes, let's rebrand and have kind of Invader come out of the ashes of 215. And that's what we've been doing ever since with Kevin Miller, the third partner of Invader Comics. And in the meantime, I've continued to write more comics along the lines. I mean, so since 2010, I've written 18 issues of Kadoja. That is a complete story. I've written 2 volumes of a kung fu story called Three Protectors. I've written issues 1 and 2 of a book called Animals, which is a horror story. I've also written my debut novel, which is going to come out later this year. We already did a Kickstarter for it, but it's going to be in bookstores in the fall. Awesome. It's called The Witchmaster of Norway. And then, of course, I have my newest book, which is currently up for order on comic shops, and it's called Space Minotaur.
So it is on FOC. When's the FOC on that?
March 16th. March 16th.
Okay. All right. Let me make sure I do that before we get off this call.
Sure, sure. And in the meantime, if you don't mind, let me turn on my lights because I'm going to start to have a very haunted look to me in a second as the sun goes down. There you go.
I'm gonna
apologies. Yeah, that's
going to
that looks a lot better than me looking like I'm in some kind of covert operations tunnel.
Right. I'm going to pull up League of Comic Geeks. Is it on there for pull? Do you know?
I'm not sure.
Okay. I got on mic about that to get Digger up there and it got up there. So hopefully it will. But I'll definitely, if not, I'll text my, my shop, make sure he adds it to his list.
Awesome.
Cause I'll be there before the 16th. Cause like I said, this road trip's going to take me, gone for a week. So
yes,
I'll leave Sunday and I'll get home roughly the following Sunday. So
yeah.
I told him next week I won't be able to get my pulls next week, but the only pull that matters next week is the one that I'm printing myself. So
yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You gotta go for you. Yeah,
that's
totally
right. So that's exciting. So Invader came from this 215 ink. That's pretty mm-hmm. cool. You kind of rebranded, relaunched. What year was that?
Let me think. I think it was 2022. I think it was
2022. Mm-hmm. Very cool. And what was the first thing you guys did there with Invader?
We 215 had never collected a book called Dr. Crow in graphic novel format. So that was our launch book, Dr. Crow.
Very cool. Yeah. That is awesome. And then you guys are killing it. Like, you've got a bunch of books coming out. The Caitlin Kickstarter, you know, yeah. Devil in the Herd has gone crazy.
That one was
so fun talking to her. You guys have been awesome to me, so I really appreciate it. You letting me interview all your people and everything. That's been amazing. So when did you get into like drawing your own? Do you do any drawing or you just do writing?
I do not. I only write.
Yep, me too.
I am I am learning to draw, but it is awful, and I'm trying to make a commitment to draw with the idea of maybe drawing my own comic by like the year 2030. You know, like no, okay. You know, I mean, I've had similar things in life like this before. You know, the year 2030 is going to come around, and I have two options. I can either enter the year 2030 or I can enter the year 2030 knowing how to draw. So I might as well go toward that goal of knowing how to draw by the year 2030 or so. Yeah.
I didn't put a year on mine, but I'm very similar in like, I want to learn to draw too. Like,
yeah.
I had a good conversation with Caitlin about that. She's like, well, you should learn how to draw. You, mm-hmm. If you can't draw, you die. Or I don't know. She said something like that. It was funny.
Okay. Fair.
So how are you doing that? What are you doing to learn?
I mean, you know, it's funny because I also do a comic podcast on making comics called Making Comics. My podcast partner, Scott Lost, has been very instructive in giving me the good ways to learn. And, you know, so something I've had. So I did take an online drawing class at the Kubert School. I thought that was really fun. I'm probably going to sign up for another one at the next wave because you can really, you know, I'm the type of learner where I don't do asynchronous learning. I don't do self-guided learning. I'm not good at it. What I'm good at is being accountable to an instructor, either in a live setting or in a, you know, a virtual setting can work as long as it is a weekly class meeting. You are talking to me. You are telling me, Keith, that I need to give you homework, etc. Right? Like,
right.
Okay. You know, anything outside of that, I'm just not good at being accountable for it. I like that extra accountability of it. So I did that, and that was fun, but it was a six-week class. And since then, I've just been, you know, one of the things they suggested, I guess my combination right now are I'm doing what I think most people do when they're incredibly young and they start drawing, which is I'm just tracing. That's it. So I'm just finding cool things. I bought myself one of those cheap light boxes, right? It's basically just a screen that lights up. And once a day, what I'm trying to do is put something on it and trace it. And then fill it in, and then I remove it, and then I try to draw it freehand. And ideally, I keep on trying to draw it. So, you know, it's one of these things of like, I don't really want to measure myself daily. I just want to put my head down and do it and do it and do it. And then maybe after a while, I look up and say, that was good. Or I finally redraw this Dr. Doom that I did. And I'm like, that's pretty good. I finally did something good. And even in the early stages, there are moments. There are moments where you just get a nice line or you do a quick figure drawing and you're like, I got the essence of that figure. That's all right. There's something here. And that's all I can ask right now.
I like that. One of Caitlin's suggestions was finding like a, you know, a class. And I actually went to a convention this past Sunday. And one of the people I was talking to, I've met him a couple times at different conventions, but I overheard him telling somebody else that he works at an art studio. And I'm like, wait a minute. So I went up to him. I'm like, so do you do classes? He's like, we do. And he's like, the next one's a painting class. Like, I don't know if I want to paint. I want to learn like, you know, to draw.
Figure drawing, yeah.
But I might take it anyway just to get something. Because I've loved the collaboration with the artist. I found an artist, you know, you were saying how you learn. Like, I learn by doing, right? Mm-hmm. I have to do something like this podcast. Like, I had to do it and test it and throw this stuff out there. And I don't care what it looked like. I just had to learn how to do it. And episode whatever is a lot better than episode one. Mm-hmm. You know,
exactly. You learn to do by doing. Absolutely.
And I was like, I've got, you know, the writer's bug now. I'm working on script two, you know, on this notebook now that I've got the first one pretty much done and going to print. And I've got like three more in my, you know, head. The cool things, because all of my the comics right now are based on like the podcast mascot. Mm-hmm. You know, we have like a comic word bubble mascot.
Yeah, yeah.
And the cool thing about that is he can be in any time, any space, anywhere. You know, there's no like restrictions. So I want to do a Western. I want to do like a space story. I want to do like a medieval story, you know.
Absolutely.
And I had this really cool idea for a like what I would want as my cover for like the Western, you know, and I tried to draw it the other day, trying to trace over a picture that was similar. I still need a lot of work, but I like that idea though of tracing, and cause that's what I did, but just doing it every day.
Yeah.
Like you gotta keep at it.
I think the most important thing is to simply do something. And when you're at the place where it sounds like you and I are, anything works. There isn't a thing you can't do. You know, we don't know how to draw. So anything involving drawing is going to be a good thing. And, you know, that's what Scott mentioned. He's like, when I was young and I first, you know, wanted to do stuff, I just traced stuff or drew it or whatever and scribbled and, you know, did it that way. So, you know, I think sometimes it's the adult brain that gets in the way. If I was learning comics if I was seven right now, I wouldn't even think twice about this. I wouldn't have some kind of, you know, personal dilemma over like whether I should trace as a way to learn comics. But the kid in me wouldn't care. So therefore, I shouldn't care.
Imposter syndrome.
Maybe. I mean, it's quite obvious I'm an imposter when it comes to art, right? Like, I'm not drawing anything. Yeah, yeah.
I can do graphic design a little bit, and yes, I'm okay. Yes. Like, but it's so, and art, I guess, is the same way, because graphic design is art. Like, it's so open to interpretation. Like,
yes,
there's no right way and there's no wrong way. That's the way I feel about it. And like, I think it's the right way, but everybody, you know, somebody, other graphic designer, like, nope, this is totally wrong. You got to do it this way. I'm like, okay. Like, they look the same to me, but whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's mistaking craft guidelines for rules.
Right.
You know, right. That it's not a rule. It's a craft guideline and it worked for you. There's no wrong way to do it as long as the end product looks good.
Yeah, I think mine looks good. See, this is the cover. You can't really see it, but that's the cover I did for my book.
Whoops. Yeah,
there
yeah.
There they go. But it's just, you know, it's very simple. But the whole premise is he lives in a comic book and he's found in the dollar box, right?
So nice.
It's kind of simple, but that's graphic design. I didn't draw a thing up.
Yeah.
Now, my artist, he did a couple other covers that are really cool. So, you know, that's cool. We have like seven covers. I don't know how that happened, but I have seven covers for this comic book. It's ridiculous.
That is, you're with the times, man. You're sticking with the trends. I like it.
I guess. So what was your inspiration to start writing?
I think it was a long journey. I took a screenwriting class in college and I loved it. I took a creative writing class in college and I loved it. Out of my screenwriting class, I, you know, a couple years out of college, I sort of worked on a movie script that was terrible, but I didn't think it was terrible at the time. And so I was working on that and then I did that. And then I think I sort of took the writing, you know, pushed it aside because of the chasing the dream in music and seeing what I could do with the band and seeing where we could go there. And we did okay. You know, we got indie level cred. We released records on a couple labels, and you know, you can hear our music on Spotify, I suppose.
Is
you know,
it only Spotify? Is it on Apple Music?
I'm sure it's on Apple Music.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I got a lot of windshield time coming up, so I'm gonna be searching for some music. So
there you go. There
I'm
you go.
Going to be searching for Big Pimp James.
Yes.
Big Pimp Jones.
Uh-huh.
Jones.
Yep.
Sorry. I can't
lots
read my
of
handwriting.
Instrumental funk. That's if you want instrumental funk, then you're gonna get it there.
My daughter might actually really enjoy that too.
Okay.
Be fun.
That'd yeah.
Be really
yeah.
Fun.
So yeah, I mean, it was one of those things of it just, you know, you want to say it sort of happened,
right?
Because once we had that opportunity with the record, it's like, well, I've written stuff. I love comics. It was like one of these things of like, wait a minute, why not try this? And I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know how to write a comic. I knew what screenplay format was.
Okay.
And so I did what I recommend other people do if they just want to learn how to write a comic, which is go to your local comic shop, ask them for a recommendation of a graphic novel that has some script pages in the back. Because I think in my case, I was a huge Brian Michael Bendis fan. You know, I had collected all of his indie comics. I even had some original art from an early, early Brian Michael Bendis book. And at the time, I think Powers maybe had, it wasn't the Powers script book, but it was one of his books like Powers where they had like 4 or 5 pages of script to the story. And I was like, that's all I need. And I literally just copied that format. And by copying the format, I essentially copied the way Brian Michael Bendis writes a comic script, because different people can write scripts differently. There are some people that are incredibly verbose in the margins, or, you know, they paint a huge picture, and then some people are a little bit tighter, you know? So, yeah, but then I just went from there and learned. And then at some point, this is why mimicry is okay in drawing, because mimicry was okay in writing until I got my legs under me, and then I knew how to do it. And then once you know how to do it, you're like, well, wait a minute. Why don't I just do this? Why don't I do it this way? And you can do it that way. And before
develop
you know
your own style.
Exactly. You beat me to it. You've developed your own style.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That's all right. That was how I started writing my script. It was a lot of Stephanie Phillips's videos. You know, this is how I write a script, or this is how I start. I number my sheet 1 through 20 and put my main ideas down, and I was like, well, I can do that much.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So I did that one day sitting here, and I was like, well, now I got to turn it into a script. And I went to Seattle and I went on an Alaskan cruise several months ago. And I was like, well, I got a 6-hour plane ride out there to Seattle and 5 hours back. So I took that 11 hours and wrote my script on the plane. And had nothing else to do.
Plane rides are my absolute favorite place, like, in the world to write. And like, I mean, you know, like some people, they just can't wait for like you to get airborne so they can turn their texting on and they can text in flight. I'm like, no. I left it all off. I want this 3 to 6 hours of just nothing so I can read or I can write and I can really think. So yeah, airplanes are wonderful for getting writing done.
I need to book more plane rides is what you're telling me.
There you go. From my mouth to your ears. Yeah.
I need to go to long plane rides. I wish I would have been riding, because I went to Germany 2 years ago, and that was a long plane ride.
Yes.
But 8 hours, but it was all right. I didn't sleep at all. I was hoping I would sleep, but it didn't happen.
It's the reverse
of what Germany for a week. So
that's very
really
cool.
Man. Yeah. So writing, like, I have never been a writer. That was weird for me, is how I got this writing bug. Like, I hated writing. Mm-hmm. I hated reading too, but I, you know, read comics, but like to grab like a novel off the show, no, not going to be. Even today, I won't do that. Now I've got a 1,000-page Thor omnibus that I'm reading every night, but that's different.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you. I do both. So yeah, it's all good.
So when you decided to get you wrote a comic book script, how did you find your artist and how did you make it happen?
Yeah. So Rory Smith, the guy who did the first, 10 issues of Kidoja. So it actually starts with Lance. So Lance Pilgrim is the person who was the graphic designer and sort of the editor of those early Kidoja comics. And I knew, so this is one of those follow the bouncing ball. I knew Lance because my band had done a record with a DJ based out of Philadelphia. Actually, his name is Scheme Richards. And so we had done a single with Scheme Richards. Lance was the graphic designer for that 45. He put the graphic design together. So I naturally met Lance. And then we found, we bonded over obviously funk music and things that are cool, but also a shared love of comics. We all, all three of us and so many people loved all that nostalgia stuff, right? And old comics and everything. So we kind of bonded over that. And then I think when the proposed record came through, this sort of not Godzilla this fake Not Godzilla soundtrack came through, I think he was the one I hit up and said, you know, well, what do you think about this? He's like, cool. He's like, I got an artist who I think you'll like. And that was when he put me in contact with Rory Smith. And at the time, Rory had drawn his own comic, I think, and Lance met him because he had done some party flyers for Lance, I believe. But it turned out he did his own comics. And then I looked at Rory's samples, and there was one sample in particular where there was a Bigfoot sort of chasing a Jeep through the mountains. What blew me away was Rory's use of perspective. It was the closest thing to a giant monster that he'd done, but it was also like his use of perspective was so amazing. And so, yeah, one thing led to another. And then, you know, Rory drew, you know, inked everything the first 10 issues of Kodoji. He got a little assist because he had to sort of move on to something else about halfway through issue 9. But yeah, so that's kind of how it started.
I'm sure it's the same for you, but for me, it was amazing to get pages back, you know, when something that I wrote and just loosely wrote on paper. I was very loose on my script. It wasn't tight at all, but which is fine. I wanted him to have his interpretation of however he saw it.
Yes.
And just getting that back is just the best feeling in the world.
It also never gets old. Like,
really?
I just got interiors back of what would essentially be what I name, I think, four sort of five titles / properties that I've written. And there's a sixth, you know, there's a new story. Because after I did, you know, that 10-year run plus of Kodoja, essentially, I was like, well, let me keep on telling more stories in new universes, in miniseries with new characters, you know, whatever. That's just my muse. And so this one is another new thing. And I just got pages back today. And I was like, amazing. Same exact feeling. So, you know, that's a good thing. There are no diminishing returns on getting art back from artists. It feels like the first time every time. And it feels like the first time every time, every single time you get your book from the printer.
Well,
every
right. time. That's next
it's magic.
Week.
Magic.
I cannot wait. Like, I might cry. I'm going to try to record everything. Like,
yes.
I'm going to have my daughter recording. I might even put like a GoPro on her just to walk around or something. But
yeah.
I'm going to try. We're going to do our episode because we always record on Thursdays, her and I, when she gets out of school. And but she won't be in school next week. But I'm going to hopefully we're going to set up and interview the owner of the print shops, a friend of mine as well. And, you know, it's going to be an amazing, you know, experience to just have that thing in my hands. And
awesome.
I can't wait. It's going to be
awesome.
So cool.
It is everything you think it's going to be.
Then hopefully I'll sell a copy or two, hopefully. So,
that's also cool.
You know?
Yeah.
The first time you sell one, I'm sure, is another great feeling.
It was cool. Yeah, I mean, I can't say I remember it. Like, I remember, you know, the feeling of the first. Because I think the first time I sold Kodoja was Philadelphia. It was Wizard World Philadelphia. I think that's where it was. And, yeah, I mean, it's weird to think back on that show to know that. Because I vaguely remember how many copies I sold. And it's like, it was like $5. You're going to sell more copies. Like, now here I am, you know, 15 plus years in, and I have graphic novels. I have series of graphic novels. But just the units moved at that first show, it was great. You know, and it was like one comic. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. You know, so yeah, I remember, to your point, I don't necessarily remember one sale. But I remember that experience of the first show. Like, this is so cool. This is something that I helped create, that I helped put into the world, and other people want to buy it and they want to read it and they seem like they are interested in it.
Well, I have that coming up March 21st. So
awesome.
The first show, we're doing a little one-day show at like a high school.
Okay.
Nerd fest kind of show.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, we're doing a bunch, actually. I mean, we're traveling all over. I'm going to Terrificon. Are you guys going to Terrificon?
I don't know. We are not. I can't remember where that one is.
In Connecticut.
Oh, okay.
In August. That's the biggest one I think I'm going to be doing. But we're going to do some in Michigan, Oklahoma, North Carolina, Georgia. I'm looking for a couple in Texas. I'm going all over. Except
nice.
The West Coast yet. I'll be the nice. West Coast eventually.
Are you driving to all those shows?
Most likely.
Okay, yeah. So. That's the East Coast advantage right there. the East Coast advantage is that you can drive to nearly everything. Out here in Southern California, it's like okay, here are the following towns or metro areas that are less than a 10-hour drive away. Less than 10. San Diego.
Yeah.
Las Vegas. Phoenix. The Bay Area. I'm done. I think that's it. You know, now, yeah. I mean, that's it, you know, and those are still all great places, but well, even
Seattle's probably Seattle's probably 12, 13, 14 hours.
Yeah. I mean, Seattle's like a 21-hour drive from here or something. Oh yeah. Yeah. Jeez. It's, okay. I think I remember Portland, I think is 20 because we have family in Portland and we've debated whether maybe it's either 16 or 20, but it's quite a bit. So maybe Portland's 16 and Seattle's 19 or something like that, but it's a bear. No, it's a flight place. Yeah.
Oklahoma City's like 18 hours. That's about the far, then get to like Austin about the same time if I go the other way.
Yeah.
Michigan, where I'm going, is 15 hours next
week.
Okay.
So you're a road warrior.
Oh yeah. I love traveling. So
yeah. Salt Lake City is 11. So I've done Salt Lake City in the past too.
All right. Yeah. So that's my goal. One day I'll end up in Oklahoma and then I can start doing like, you know, the
branching.
I'll be in the crossroads. I can go anywhere at that
point.
So, you know, then I could do more like Vegas and Salt Lake. I've been to those places. I love those places, but I don't want to live there yet. But
yeah, I hear you.
You know, it is what it is. So tell us about your new book, Space Minotaurs. Tell us about that.
I mean, it's my favorite pitch ever. It's the Minotaur, but in space. It's, the premise of it is that the Minotaur, I'll talk about the premise and then I'll talk about how the title first came up. So the premise is the Minotaur did not die in the labyrinth. That's something that is touched on in one of the two stories here in, you know, Invader Comics Presents Space Minotaur, which presents two separate stories from the life of Space Minotaur. It was a fun idea. You know, it came about as pure accident. You know, I was actually in a comic shop. I think they had to close because the owner retired. But it's a place called Enjoy Comics, and it was in Hilo, Hawaii. So and at the time it was the only comic shop on the Big Island. So I'm there and I am digging through comics on the floor. They had like really nice $2 bins. So there's like a sort of $2 and 10 boxes wide on the top, 10 boxes wide on the floor. I'm sitting there on the floor and I'm going through the $2 bins and I'm just, whenever I dig hard for comics, I pull out everything that I even remotely like. And then I do a second pass to decide if I actually want to buy it. Like, was that just a fun spur of the moment thing? So I'm digging through stuff and I'm pulling out books, you know, in like, I don't know, the indie section or something. I'm like, okay, you know, or just mixed in. I'm like, Star Trek. Okay. Yeah, maybe, you know, oh, that's a cool Batman. I don't know if I have that. All right. Space Minotaur, Green Arrow, you know, some indie book. And I'm like, wait a minute. Did I just pull out a book called Space Minotaur? And so I go back through the books and I look at them. The title wasn't Space Minotaur. In fact, it was Space Something. It wasn't Minotaur. So I had misread the title. Space Minotaur didn't exist. So I'm going to invoke a weird Simpsons reference here. I don't know if you know your Simpsons, but there's an episode where Homer sees a billboard advertising a clown college. And he claims, like, he's like, what a stupid idea. Clown college is stupid. But then over the next 3 minutes, he sees all he's doing is thinking about how stupid clown college is. And then at the dinner table, he stands up and goes, fine, I'm going to clown college. And then everybody's like, what are you even talking about? You know? So in a similar method, after I didn't see Space Minotaur, I'm like, I'm just walking out of the store like, but should Space Minotaur exist?
Yes.
Like a comic, like this Space Minotaur doesn't exist. So like it should, right? And so for a little over a day, I just kept it to myself. I'm like cycling through my head. I'm like, should I do this book, Space Minotaur? Right? Like it seems interesting, but what would it be? What would it talk about? You know, like what would the characters be? What would they do, etc.? And then like you know, much like Homer, I'm like having coffee with my wife and a couple of our friends the next day. And I'm like, okay. I got this idea. It's been bothering me. It's been bothering me since yesterday. And so I said, I tell them the whole story. I'm like, so like, should I do Space Minotaur? And they're like, oh God, yes. Yeah. So do that. So that's, you know, it started with a misread comic title. And then everything just built after that. You know, the natural questions I think you ask yourself as a writer, if a comic is called Space Minotaur, well, then what do I do? How do I get the Minotaur in space? Wait, the Minotaur's dead. Why is it alive? Okay, well, everything you ever read was a myth. That's no pun intended, right? Like that's not the way it happened. The Minotaur survived. And so then once you have that, it just opens up, you know, a lifetime, a millennia, potentially, of stories about the Minotaur.
It's amazing. So what you sent me to read, is that what the book is, or is there more to it? Or
that is the first two stories.
First two stories. Okay.
First two stories. There are, so we're doing that as like a proof of concept, you know, where they are standalone stories, mm-hmm. but believe it or not, there is something larger at play here, right? So, you know, it's fun. It was fun to do. Sorry, when I say it's fun, I mean it was fun to think of, because the first story, you know, that you see from the year 2186 is where I knew it would start. But then randomly, you know, I don't know. So I love like tokusatsu. I love like old Japanese superhero TV. And I was like, well, let's involve superhero TV. Like, how fun would that be? You know, and so, yeah. Sorry. You know what? I'll continue with the origin story just a little bit. Because so as I'm starting to write Space Minotaur, I had initially had the vision of Space Minotaur to be like sort of a gnarly, you know, brutal, almost R-rated kind of space opera. But what I wanted was, before I had worked with the artist that I thought would be a good artist for it, I was like, you know what I'd really love is character sheets. I'd love to see what these things look like so I can give them as references to the artist. So I actually hit up Rory Smith, who I've been in contact with over the last couple of years. You know, it turns out that we met on the East Coast and we both now live out here in the LA area. And so I said, hey, would you be interested in drawing character sheets here? And so he drew the character sheets, he gave them to me, and he's like, so what if I told you I wanted to draw this comic? And I'm like, I mean, that would be the best thing, right? Like the person that I first got into this comic journey with now wants to do Space Minotaur. So the rest is history. So to directly answer your question, two stories are published. There are two more that I've written, and we'll sort of see where this goes. And there, again, there is a larger thing at play here.
Awesome. So the FOC is March 16th.
Yes.
When's it going to release, roughly?
April 29th.
April 29th.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. I will definitely pick that up. It'll be on the wall. This will be, well, eventually it might be a whole invader wall. I don't know.
So. Well, okay. Well, I have no arguments.
Well, except for, like, I might have to add another shelf because my seven covers are going to be up there at some point, too. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Yeah, I hear you.
they take a little bit. I mean, I love you guys, but. Mine comes a little bit first.
I hear you.
No, you know, it's nothing personal. What inspiration, or if you had to give somebody in the community, creator, whatever, you know, a piece of advice, what is the one piece of advice you'd give somebody?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit cliche, but sometimes they're cliches because they're true. They're at least some degree true. And the answer, you know, the thing I would say is just stick with it. The thing that works the best for me is stick with it, you know, and I'll paraphrase here what I say to people when they'll come up to like my table at a show or they'll ask me stuff. And I'll there's this great little video. It can't be more than a minute long. And it's a little snippet of speech from Ira Glass, who I believe did a very popular show on NPR. And what he talks about is this thing called the gap. And I'm gonna do my best to paraphrase it. And he says, what I wish people would have told me when I started out is that when you first start, you have good taste. you have good taste. But when you start making things, there's a gap between what you are making and your taste. And that's the thing that frustrates people. They see what they're making, but they know their taste. And there's this wide, wide divide. Well, the way you narrow the divide is by making stuff. It's by doing stuff. It's by drawing every day. It's by writing every day. You know, in his case, he's talking about making a show, editing a show, whatever it is, whatever the thing you're doing, you know, and his thing, which I am, again, co-opting here, is like, trust your taste. Your taste got you here. And the more you work, the more your gap, the more you're going to narrow that gap to where your output is now matching your taste. So, and you only do that by showing up every single day, whatever it's going to be, by writing every day, by drawing every day, reading every day is sort of, it's a must. You must read every day. You know, it doesn't have to be anything. It can be anything specific. It can be comics. I gave my kids comics when they were younger. Comics are hopefully properly rated these days, but they might still be underrated as a way to get kids into reading, get people into reading. So these days I read a ton of stuff. I read novels, I read articles, I read comics, of course. I mean, is a must, whatever it is. And then doing stuff every day is a must. And trust your taste, narrow the gap, sort of luxuriate in the frustration, and understand that the more things you do, the more you are going to close that gap from your output to your taste.
That's a great way of putting it. I have not heard that. And I know Ira Glass, well, I don't know him personally, but I mean, I've listened to a lot of NPR in my life, but that's a great analogy, a great way to put a different perspective way to put that. Like we were saying earlier, like doing the podcast, like episode one is different than episode 20 to episode, you know, whatever, you know, just keep doing it and narrowing it and narrow the gap. I'm writing that one down. The gap.
And there's totally a diminishing, you know, there's a, I don't want to say diminishing returns. I think that'd be the second time I said it, but like there is every single page of script you write, every single drawing you do, every single page you draw, you're going to get better. And the need you have to get better, it gets smaller and smaller. You know, so like the difference between the first page you and I ever draw and the 20th page you and I ever draw is going to be huge, because the first page is generally going to be awful. And the 20th page will probably be hopefully somewhat acceptable. And you know, and then the difference between 20 and 50 is going to be from somewhat acceptable to like, okay. And then from 50 to 70, it's going to be from okay to like kind of good, you know, and then before you know it, you know, the more stuff you do, the more you get there. And it's, but you got to do those first ones and really punch through the stuff that's, you know, probably objectively lousy, but.
Right.
You know, you do it with, you have to do it with a sort of, you know, there's a great phrase in yoga, I think, that's like childlike wonder. As long as you approach everything with like childlike wonder, you know, and I remember hearing that from like a yoga instructor. You know, if you're trying to do like a certain pose and you fall over, well, then have yourself a good laugh and get right back into it. It's not embarrassing. It's joy, right? You tried it, you almost got there, and now you keep on going. So, you know, I think if you can approach the bad stages, the early stages of your own development, and try to just keep that sense of childlike wonder and not be particularly critical, I think it can yield great results.
It's crazy. You know, this isn't the golf podcast like we were saying earlier, but it's, we have such there's so many similarities in the process of, you know, getting better. It works for anything,
yes.
You know, because it's so, a lot of the same topics that we talk about here, you know, come up on the golf podcast, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and we have this thing where it's, you know, at least 20, right? Like, if you're going to do something or pass, you know, a certain yardage in golf, you know, it takes 20 attempts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're going to get better. You're going to get a little worse. You're going to get better. Like, it's not just a straight line, right? It's
absolutely,
the similarities are just uncanny to me, which, you know, it's more motivation for me to keep going, keep doing yeah. my graphic design covers, draw a little bit here and there, and yeah. keep writing. The second script's so much better than my first script already. Yeah. I'm not done, but
yeah,
it's getting there. But
well, I mean, and I'll stay there on golf because, you know, something we said, I think, before we officially started, I do play golf. I've played golf for a long time. And so the golf version of this would be if somebody that's never played golf before stepped on a golf course right now and tried to play a round of golf, they'd probably shoot, I don't know, a 300 if we were counting. Right. You know, they'd quad up par, you know, they'd do whatever.
Right.
But the thing is, if you then go take a lesson or even two, and then you go out on the course again, maybe you shoot a 200, you know, and then you take a couple more lessons, and before you know it, you're shooting about a 120. You take a couple more lessons, and before you know it, you're somewhere around 100. And then it's like, you know,
yeah.
then the real work begins, because the amount of work it takes for you to go from a 6 handicap to a 4 is exactly as much work as it takes you to go from picking up a golf club to shooting an 85. You know,
right.
like, and because now your margin for error is much lower. If you make one mistake, well, one more, if you make the same amount of mistakes you make before, like, you have to reduce, if you shoot 6 over or something like that, well, then you probably made around 6 mistakes, but now you have to get it down to 4, you know, and like, that's really hard. It's really hard to only make 4 mistakes on a golf course.
Yes, it is. It's such a hard sport.
Yeah.
So much goes into it. It's crazy. It's funny that you say that, because, like, my daughter, when she literally started, her coach and I figured it up, like, because they had, like, a triple bogey rule in mm-hmm. her high school matches.
Yeah, that's fair.
But she was reaching triple bogey in the middle of the fairway.
Mm.
She made her lowest score, you know, the max score you get was a 63 on 9 holes. Her lowest score her freshman year was a 60. And that's because she got lucky and topped one, and it rolled up on a par 3, you know, a short 80-yard par 3, right?
Yes, exactly.
And she two-putted for a par, yeah, you know?
Yeah.
But she went from that, and we figured out she literally, if she had to count every stroke, she probably would have shot up like a 150 to 180, like, is mm-hmm. literally what she would have shot. But then her senior year, she was 2 shots away from making states in 4 yeah. years. You know, yep. It's just amazing.
Exactly.
You know, if you put the work in. Like she did for 4 years, every day playing, doing something golf every day for 4 years. It's crazy. I haven't put that together in my head until just now. But I used to, you know, fond memories of not yelling at her, but like having discussions with my daughter. Hey, something golf every day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care if it's putting on a ruler in your bedroom, you know, or if we're going to the course to play or practice or the range,
yeah.
whatever. You have to do something every
yes.
day.
Yep.
And you could tell she took 1 week off. It would go down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like with comics, with writing my script, I should write every day. I should read every day. I should draw
yep.
every day. I should
yep.
everything every day. I'm glad I brought this back to the reading, because I wrote this down. You mentioned, you know, it shouldn't be underrated. If it is, it should not be. Like, I saw, you know, a year ago, I was having parent-teacher conferences with my youngest daughter's teachers. Like, hey, she needs to read. Like, I'm trying, you know. She discovered comic books. I haven't got a call yet from the teacher. Like, they love it. And she sneaks them in her backpack, takes it, like, I'm waiting for that phone call, because she'll sneak, like, Harley Quinn's in her backpack.
Ooh, okay. Okay.
You know, because that's her favorite. But, like, you know what? I don't care. I know she's only 11. But if she's going to read, like, I let her read. She reads a lot of other stuff, too. But she likes your stuff as well. She's read all the Invader stuff.
Awesome.
excuse me. But the fact that she's reading, and I'm like speechless over it, because she has read so much and her reading's improved so much, and it's 100% due to comic books.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Underrated.
You know?
Underrated. Yeah.
It shouldn't be. Dude, I've got some fun questions, but before that, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you'd like to talk about? Because the last thing I want anybody to do is leave my show and be like, oh, I wish you would have asked me this.
Hmm.
And which we'll have more of a golf conversation while we're waiting for the upload. But
sure, sure. I mean, I will let me say that, like, I'll stump a little bit more for Space Minotaur.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, please. And Invader.
Yeah, I mean,
Anything you want to talk about Invader?
So I would say yes. Look, Invader, we've been here for, you know, 3-4 years.
Mm-hmm.
We believe in our books. We believe in the people that, you know, that are creators. We're creator friendly, and we, you know, we just feel like we're incredibly proud of our output, you know, and it's so fun to see. It's just cool. I mean, same thing, right? Like, you know, we play, you know, the publishers, we play a role in the books, you know, I mean, our name is on the masthead. So it's, you know, every book that I get my hands on, it's just like, yeah, this is really cool. I mean, it's really cool to know that this started as a conversation, or it started as an email, or it started as something. And now here it is, it's a published book on Invader, and it looks awesome, you know, and I mean, that's the thing too, you know, one of the, probably the best part of being a comic publisher is getting that book in the inbox, or getting that book that someone walked up to us to show and say, I'll send this to you, and getting it and getting like that feeling. And you're like, this book's awesome. We need to publish it, you know? And like, that's the stuff that keeps you coming back. You know, that's the drive that you catch pure right there. That's the thing that you're just going to be like, this is the best feeling. And I remember every reason why I do this, you know? So
on
so,
that yeah. note, real quick, sorry. Yeah. What do you tell these, what advice do you give to people that want to submit? What do you say to them?
I mean,
if it's great, you publish it. But what is something you'd say like, hey, this isn't quite ready yet? Or
yeah,
what are those conversations like?
How about this? The best way I can say it is. So the thing that what makes you the most likely to get published at Invader? That's the way I'll phrase it. Right.
Hey, I love this.
So thing number one is, the story is complete. So we've had plenty of conversations with people that have given us a great pitch, great 8 pages of art, sometimes even a great single issue. And then they'll be like, this is a 4-issue series. And it's like, okay, it's really good. Call us when all 4 are done. Because because we can't, the comic market doesn't really allow. I mean, the indie world, the Kickstarter world, it's different, right? Like you could make a book, you could run a Kickstarter, you can do another one 8 months later, and time flies differently in the Kickstarter world. But when we're talking about the comic market, you barely wait, you know, 1-2 months in between issues. You can be successful every other month, but even an every other month published schedule is going to mean you pretty much got to have everything right there, ready for
4 to 6 issues done.
You got to have them done. So whatever. So again, if it, you know, and we've had this, people are like, it's a 12 issue series. Here's issue 1. It's like, all right, well, that you got to do all 12, you know? So that's thing number one is if it's got to be done or incredibly, incredibly close to being done for us to be like, this is ready to publish. Otherwise, it's a cool book that we can't wait to see more of.
Right.
So that would be thing number one. And then I suppose, you know, I mean, have an original voice, have an original take, have something that we don't see a lot of. I mean, you know, there's that great adage of like, there's nothing new under the sun. But there are lesser trod areas of the map now, aren't there? Right. So, you know, I mean, and as if it's good, it overrides everything. I mean, Devil in the Herd is a great example. It's quote a Western, but it's not a Western. You have to expand your, it's a horror Western. And the second you say like, it's a horror Western, it's like, oh, well, let's tell me more, please. You know? So, you know, all the books, right? Like The Digger, it's a fresh take on something. It's something that's sort of at once obvious, but yet people never did it. And that's what's fun about it, right? Like it's not as hard as people think to have something that's just a fresh take. So it can be original, it can be entirely original, or it can just be a fresh take, you know? So yeah, that's what I would say. I mean, obviously it's got to be good, you know, but good, original, and complete, you know, or at least fresh. I don't want to say original, because people can get bogged down with original and think they need to make that, you know, I don't know, novel about a, you know, crime fighting cupcake with a chainsaw arm that travels multiple dimensions or something like that. And that story hasn't been done, but you know, there might be a reason for it as well. Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. No, that was part of that. Put that in perspective to give that, you know,
sure.
I had a really good conversation with Jared Rowe and David Flores, you know, the Do Not Disturb authors,
yeah,
and illustrators. Yeah. I've had them both on, but I've also just kept up with them. You know, we've emailed and, you know, chatted on, you know, thing. And I sent them both my book because they were cool enough to, I don't know, you probably heard about it, but one of the things I did in my book is because since it's set in a comic shop, or mm-hmm. part of it is, I was trying to figure out what books go on the shelf inside the comic shop inside my comic book.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to just use like generic or like rip off like Thor, which we did a couple of those, you know, Thor mm-hmm. or whatever. But what I did is a lot of the people that I've interviewed, I used their cover in the, you know, so Do Not Disturb and The Digger are in on the shelf inside Very my cool. comic shop, right? Which Very I thought cool. was really cool.
Yeah.
So I sent them both. I sent everybody that I'm working on sending it, you know, a digital copy, and I'll get them a physical copy when I get them. But I was like, you know, what do you guys think? I want an honest opinion, you know, like my comic, you know, trying to, you know, I want to learn. And they were really honest. And they were like, oh, we love it. It's all ages. It's really good. And it's the perfect like pitch to your podcast. Cause it really mm-hmm. is. It ties it to the podcast. And I was like, that makes perfect sense. I love Great. That. Like that Great. Angle. Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it, cause it ties to the podcast, ties to, you know, and it has a good message. Cause it's like got an anti-bullying message in it too.
Sure.
And it truly is for all ages. So I thought it was cool. So that made me feel good to be able to like go to shows and be able to pitch it as a something for everyone.
Yes.
You know, absolutely. So that absolutely. Was really cool.
No, and that's so, and that sort of leads into the little bit of Space Minotaur additional stuff I want to say, right? Which is, so we actually did a proof of concept of Space Minotaur about a year ago. And the biggest change from that to the Invader Presents Space Minotaur is it's much more age appropriate. So something that we did, you know, is that the profanity is starred out. I'm not going to say how it starred because I would it's like you to pick cool. up the comic. Yeah, I would like people to pick up the comic, but yeah, thank you. So, you know, and the nice thing about that is that actually drops the age level to like, I don't know, like a 10-year-old could probably read that and not feel too, you know, feel, and we wouldn't feel bad about it. So that's kind of like thing number one is that it's close to an all ages book. Number two is that, you know, I mean, I've talked about Rory Smith a fair amount here, but like Rory Smith. So the reason that he stepped away from Kidoja a long time ago is because he was pursuing a full-time career in animation. Since then, he has worked for basically every animation studio. And he's currently working for animation studios. And when I say everyone, I mean Pixar. I mean DreamWorks, right? He's done storyboards for them. Wow. And so I say that because when you pick up Space Minotaur, or if, you know, if people out there aren't sure about it, they've never heard anything, like I encourage you to look it up online. It looks like an animated film. It looks exactly like these things. It has like an old school animation feel, but you can tell that the artist does storyboards and does animation and is very fluent with the forms, right? So, you know, aside from that, I have fun with the writing. You know, I tried to pepper in some references. So he'll make references to his past history as a subject of Greek myth. So there's, you know, again, he is, in fact, the Minotaur, and he lets you know that through certain things in the book. So that's it. I just wanted to stump a little bit more for the book that, like, I encourage people to check it out. I like to think it's fun. I had fun making it. Rory had fun drawing it. And we think that translates to the final product.
I can't wait to get a physical copy. I read a lot of digitally because for the podcast, you have to because people send you a lot, which is fine. I get
Advance.
It.
Advance. Yeah.
I don't like it, but I do it. Mm-hmm. I'd much rather have, like, I did not read. TS sent me The Digger like 4 or 5 times digitally, and I refused to read. I was like, I'm not reading it till it's in my hand.
Nice.
So actually, that was one I stood my ground, but I read Do Not Disturb digitally, and, you know, Caitlin sent me their first few pages of, you know, whatever, however many pages it was, Devil in the Herd, which was awesome. Now I can't wait to get it. I did back it. I think I was backer number 3 or 4. So
awesome.
She told me I had to, or I was like, I don't know. She was going to send a van to my house and, you know.
Okay. She knows people. Yeah.
She knows people. Well, she also, I got on her good side because I didn't know she worked. I had no idea when I interviewed her. No clue that she does V Friends.
Hmm.
And I actually have some of her V friends, which is crazy. Well,
that was there before you even knew her. Oh, that's killer.
Correct. Okay. So it wasn't there. It was on my pile, right?
Yeah,
It was on the shelf behind me here. And literally, I put out a video of my face when she's like, because she made the comment, oh, I work in art full time. You know, I'm lucky Gail do this. I'm like, okay. So I was circling back to that. And I was like, oh, you get to do this full time. Like, how do you do that? It's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, I work for this little company called V Friends. And I'm like, wait, what? She's like, yeah, you've probably never heard of it. And I'm like, and I turn around and I pull out like my stack of V Friends comics.
Nice.
She made me open one. So this one's open.
Okay.
Yeah. She made me open the, because that's the other one she did. So I ended up having some of the ones she already did, which I thought was hilarious.
That's awesome.
I had no clue. She's like, you actually know what they are? And I'm like, I have some.
Yeah, that's great.
Which that was just hilarious to me that she actually, that she did that, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea where I was going with that, but I'm going to pick up your book. I think it circles back to digital and physical, and I'm going to get this March 16th. Go order it. So now the fun questions.
Let's do it.
All right. Who was your first favorite superhero or comic character?
Well, my first one was probably, I just have to say, Black Costume Spider-Man. That's when I got into comics. So I got into comics right during the Black Costume Spider-Man era before it became Venom Carnage at all. Yeah.
Very cool. Do you remember the first comic book you ever read?
I do. I remember the first comic that I loved.
Okay.
And that was Secret Wars 4. So, for people not familiar with Secret Wars 4, that is the one where the cover is a lot of negative space and it is the Hulk holding up a mountain. And there's like a narrow gap where all the superheroes are because he's keeping the mountain that has been thrown on them from crushing all of the heroes in Secret Wars.
That's cool. I'm gonna
as soon as
that.
I saw that cover, I'm like, I am here for this.
I'm in.
Show me more. Yeah, show me more.
Yeah, like you, I was into comics as a kid. Like when I was a little kid, we didn't have a comic shop anywhere near, or I didn't know of one or didn't get to go to one. So I would get like newsstand ones occasionally, but it used to make me so mad because I couldn't get them in order. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'd find issue one or two, but then it'd be like six the next. It used to make me so mad. And then yes. I did, you know, I had a kid when I was really young, when I was like 19. So I kind of got out of everything in life and went to work, take care of my kid. And then when she was about 12 or 13, we got into Thor comics. She actually enjoyed Thor around the time the Thor movies were coming out. And so we did some Thor stuff then, got into it. And then again, I had a second kid and I was like, kind of put it all away and, you know, back to work.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's been amazing. You know, the last year, my youngest daughter discovering comics would be able to, now I have boxes
That's
upon
awesome.
Boxes everywhere
awesome.
In this room.
So, like, hold my drink.
Yeah.
Time
I've
for
got,
me to get
my
back into
to
this.
Read pile is insane.
Yeah.
But it's whatever. I'm going back and reading all the original Thors right now. It's been a lot of fun.
That's amazing.
I'm on 150. I think I'm 157 tonight. So.
Mm.
Reading one at least one a day, so it'll take me 2 years to get through them all. But
that's awesome.
That's all right. All right. If you could live in any comic book universe, which would it be?
Man, if I could live in any comic book, so like, are we talking like a Marvel DC or
yeah,
like
Marvel,
a specific world?
Or you can go to like, you know, I've had the best answer I ever got is they wanted to live in like Peanuts. You know, just nothing happens, just chilling with a dog.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I, you know,
right?
out of for lack of a better answer, I think I would rather live in the DC universe.
Okay.
Universe to me kind of narrows it, you know.
Right.
But yeah, like back in the day, I tended to be a stronger DC person. Of course, DC's been having a great couple years now. I like the idea of the cities not being quote, real cities. You know, I mean, the whole premise of Marvel was, yeah, it's in New York, they're real people, blah, blah, blah. But like, I kind of like it the other way. I like, and I do
Gotham
that in my
city, Metropolis.
I try to do that in as many of my stories as possible. It's always a slightly altered version of this, of
right.
reality. It's not Houston. It's not, you know, Los Angeles. It's whatever, you know, Kadoja takes place in a town called Port Emerald. Right. So a fusion of Seattle and Portland. Right. That's just that's more fun to me. So, yeah, I like the idea of like Metropolis and Gotham and, you know, those kind of places.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way. But I was a huge Batman fan as a kid, of course, you know, but like I really enjoyed the and I'm wearing the shirt. I forgot to change into my Talking Comic shirt before this. Mm. We went to sell. This is from. Deadwood, South Dakota. So it's got like Wild Bill Hickok, Calamity Jane, you know, Seth Bullock, you know, it's from the Black Hills. We went there last summer.
Nice.
And it was funny because like a few months later, the Deadpool Wolverine series, they did the last 10 issue run of that, was set a lot of it in Deadwood. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah,
Wild
Bill
actually comes back as a zombie in that book. So
okay, that's always wild.
It's crazy. All right, so your own, that's cool. So if you could have any superpower, what would you choose? That's, you know, the cliche one.
Yeah, I mean, there's like a cliche answer. There's a cliche answer, but it also feels like the... Okay, I know what it is.
I love this.
So one of my favorite heroes is Firestorm. So I would have the ability, and it's also incredibly powerful to have the ability to control molecules or like molecular matter. So, I mean, if you're giving me a superhero, I might as well be as high powered as possible.
Exactly.
So let's just give me control over all matter.
Yeah, I agree. I love it. All right. You can pick any character. It doesn't have to be a sidekick, but which character would you choose as your sidekick?
So like a real life sidekick. Like I'd get to pal around with the person. Is that what you're saying? It's tough because there are clever answers, but they aren't true.
Right.
So, you know, like a clever answer might be Lobo, but would I really want to hang around with, would I really want that as my sidekick?
Yeah.
If I could pick any characters, can I go anywhere?
Anywhere. Anything. You can pick Snoopy. You can pick Garfield. I don't care.
How about... Now what happens is you end up having, like, obligatory ways to shoehorn in characters you like, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, to that extent, I'm going to answer Boba Fett.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, let's just have Boba Fett pal around with me, you know?
Star Wars does not get brought up on this podcast. Like, this might be the second time.
Okay.
In 90-some episodes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm here for that. I need to figure out. I need more Star Wars in my background.
Yeah.
There's like one thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
almost answered Mechagodzilla, but that would be a very clumsy sidekick as well. Like, you know, a 300-foot tall.
I've had some interesting answers. It's been... A lot of people have said the Flash.
Okay.
Which I thought was odd. Every time it seems odd to me, but they're like, oh, he can just like speed me away to safety. I'm like, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
And then a couple people were like Tony Stark because he's rich. I'm like, oh, you know, that makes sense. I totally get that one.
Yeah.
I think Stephanie Phillips literally said Garfield. I want a lasagna eating cat, which was funny. All right. This is the last one and the hardest one.
Last one.
It might be easy for you, though. If your life were a comic book, what would the title be? I get some great answers on this one.
If my life were a comic book. So I'm gonna co-opt a phrase. My life would be called... if my life were a comic, what would it be called? I've seen it done worse. That would be the title of my...
That's pretty good.
Somebody said that to me at one point. I did something, and they were like, I've seen it done worse. And I was like, yeah, that's like the title of my autobiography right there. Right? So...
That's got to be the title, and you've got to start writing that.
Someday.
Someday? All right. I will read that. I just agreed to read a novel. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Where can I get all of your books? Are they all available at Invader or some?
Yeah, I mean, the safest place to get all of our books is invadercomics.com, right? I mean, obviously, go to your local comic shop, try to get books through your local comic shop, pre-order books through your local comic shop, sure. Tell the retailers you want Invader Comics, you know, call it out by name, say it's got a FOC or just show up on Wednesday and grab one. But yeah, if you can't do that, then yeah, we have our, whatever we still have in stock, we have it in VaderComics.com.
Do you still have like all your old ones in stock as well? Or?
Ooh, no. I mean, I can't remember. I'd have to look, but I know we have a lot of low inventory on some of our first, second, even third year books.
Awesome. What about reprints?
We could do that. We've done it.
If there's enough demand.
Yeah, we've done it. Exactly. Exactly.
Cool. So everybody go to Invader Comics to get books, or go, number one, go to your local comic shop before, and I'm going to release this before March 16th, and go to your shop, tell them you want Space Minotaurs, and it'll come out April 29th.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Rock on.
Well, Keith, thank you so much for joining. This has been amazing.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. I want you back at some point, please. Maybe when you do your next issue or whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
At some point.
Deal.
Yeah. So check out. I'll have all the links below, and we'll see you next time. Thanks again.
We don't just talk about comics. We made one.
And it's called The Chronicles of Pin and Pete.
At Talking Comics, we interview creators, show off our comic calls,
play fun games, and show what we're learning firsthand.
Get a free peer review of The Chronicles of Panel P by subscribing to our Substack.
Watch the trailer and all the video episodes on YouTube.
Or listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Follow along, like, subscribe.
Trying to start a podcast but feeling stuck? At Aquatio, we help creators make waves with everything you need to bring your voice to life. Hosting, recording, editing, and marketing. Whether you're starting from scratch or just need a little help polishing your sound, we're here to hydropower your creativity. Comment on this video or DM us today and let's dive in.